Everybody, J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another Baseball America Prospect Podcast. And today we are talking about prospects that you may know a little bit less about, but you should know. Now, I know that there's a wide range of knowledge out there. Some of you I know are going to hear these names, see these names, and be like, I know about these players. And thank you. You're a Baseball America subscriber, probably. And we appreciate that. And then there are going to be others of you who are like, these are, you know, several of these names I've never heard before, period. And that's also fine. That's why we were trying to do this. But even if you do know about these names, I think that you will enjoy this. You will get something out of this because we want to highlight these are five players. They're all now in the top 100, but we've updated our top 100 prospects rankings a couple of weeks ago. And then we've kind of almost done a mini update here, not because we did a re-rank or anything like that, but because we hit the date where anyone who was on opening day roster graduated. So in one weekend, we had five players graduate. As we are recording this, we don't know if Connor Griffin will graduate tonight or not. So if that happens, we will add another player tonight / tomorrow morning. By the time you're watching this, listening to this, you may have a new number one at Baseball America, which we told you about on the podcast last week. It's Jesus Madej. We're not going to have to, you know, we're not going to give you a whole lot of intrigue on that, but Jeff, good to see you, and we're just going to dive straight into this. There are five prospect names to know here, but I think we should start off with a banger because this is one that, the way I would put it is, coming into the year, top 30 prospect, but if you had told me on February 1st that Braves outfielder Eric Hartman would be on the top 100, I would have probably said you're crazy, even though he did have a solid year last year, stole 48 bags in low A, 20th round out of a Canadian high school, and has really been one of the best performers in baseball, in minor league baseball so far this year. What about Eric Hartman has kind of caught your eye so far? And did he catch your eye? I'm trying to think. I think you did get to, unlike me, you were at Braves breakout. I can't remember. Was he in the breakout game?
I believe that he was in the breakout game. If not, I had... Let me look at that Braves versus Yankees breakout game and confirm that he was, in fact, in that game. But I'm pretty sure I saw him. I remember the run times that I had clocked and seeing some of the power. So I'm going to double check. I have the
I'll look that up while you're talking about Hartman. Yeah. I'll look up and find if he was part of that.
But yeah, I know I did see him on the backfields. He was a name that was, you know, kind of mentioned to us a little bit. He started in left field.
He's 1-for-2 in the breakout game.
Exactly. So probably have some video of him too. But we've gotten loud feedback. The data that we have access to for the full minor league suite, it's not just the public leagues, AAA and Florida State League. You know, we have some contacts that allow us to get access to everything. We've had those numbers. I've had those numbers for a very long time prior to my time here at Baseball America. So it's something that we're familiar with. And I think the thing I bring that up, JJ, to kind of put into perspective, we're very good at this point of knowing what's signal versus noise in the first month of the season and the type of stuff to pay attention to. Performance is one. Contact and approach, those numbers have not stabilized yet. I think you get a general gist of where these guys lie. EVs and angles are much less noisy, especially in a smaller sample size. They stabilize a lot earlier. It's things that you can pick up on by just watching a little bit of video, backing it with some data, looking at even some of the public stuff in terms of, you know, pull rates and also, of course, ground ball and line drives and fly ball rates and all those sort of things. The thing that we noticed with Hartman is the power jump was pretty significant year over year. He had his hardest hit ball of his career with a couple of, you know, 110 plus balls in play thus far. And he was a guy with great speed. The swing and miss with the additional power, with the improved angles, has actually gotten better. It was it's a 17% in zone miss rate kind of coming out of the last month. It was a little bit under 19 last year. I also want to put one narrative to bed. There were some numbers that were floated out there as 81 miles per hour average exit velocity in 2025 for Hartman. That is incorrect. I've double checked with three different teams, three different sources. It's 85 miles per hour is what his average was last year, a 102.4 mile per hour, 90th. He's more 105 this year. And by the way, that was a pretty good number based on the fact
that was a terrible number last year, but it's a better number this year.
Well, the 102.4 for an 18-year-old at a full season level isn't bad. That is actually above minor league average, at least, and it's certainly above like age and level average. Now he's above major league average, and the hard hit rate is around 50%. He's hitting a lot of line drives. He's hitting the ball in the air pretty consistently. He's doing damage against, you know, both pitch types. He's got a 1,000 ops against righties and 1,000 ops against lefties. He's hitting flat fastballs. He's hitting spin. Changeups kind of fringy, but not terrible. Overall, his entire performance is excellent. And then you mix in the athlete, JJ, the 70, I've even heard 80 run times at times. There's a good chance that he's going to stick in center field. He at least has the tools for it. If he moves to right, he's going to be a valuable outfielder out there in the corner. So I think we look at all this. We talked to scouts, and you know, we had a couple of scouts that had put average or better grades on him. Once we have all those combination of factors, it's really easy for us to kind of jump a guy like this onto the list. Even if it's maybe not traditional, if it's maybe a little bit faster, based upon what, you know, his pedigree was entering the season. It's not often that 20th round high school picks jump onto the top 100 within a couple of years, but here we are. And I think it's warranted.
I would say that's the thing I think it's worth explaining. If it was just that Eric Hartman had a good first month and we looked at the stats and said, wow, he's got one of the best WRC pluses in baseball right now, he would not be on our 100. It was that. Now, I will tell you, we noticed. I mean, it's not like we didn't go. Jeff writes wires, I write wires. We do hot sheet. You know, we do that every week. We're very aware of how good he's been as far as performance. But when you look at that performance, then you check it with data. You check it with scouting sources. You get from people like that not working for the Braves, like, no, that's a top 100 prospect right now. That's when you're like, okay, we're doing it. We're putting him on the 100. We would never have considered it going into the season. But at the same time, I would say I don't feel like that this is this is not nearly as risky a addition to the 100 as maybe like a really interesting pitcher who's in low A, where you're like, hey, if it looks really good, the stuff's really good, but we know there's about four more steps. He could get hurt. There's about 1,000 things. Eric Hartman has power and has speed. As we said, he stole 48 bags last year. At this point, if you look at where he is right now, we are sitting here in mid-May, and he has 12 homers and 13 steals. If you want to talk about a power-speed combo, again, a 2020 season at this point would be a disappointment for a healthy Eric Hartman. That would be that his rate of homers and steals dropped way off. A 25-25 is like, seems almost, again, for a healthy Hartman, 30-30 is not crazy at all. He stole 48 bags last year. 30 homers, that's a big jump considering where he was. But if he ends up at 20-40 this year, that's just those are impactful numbers. You look at the development. Also, still a little noisy, but the improvement in contact rate we've seen even in season. Ian Kundle for us made a point of like noting that, you know, this is a guy who struck out 25 times in 22 games in April, and he struck out basically five times in nine games in May. Like, and if you look at play appearances, his strikeout rate has really dipped as the season's gone along. It's just a very interesting prospect, and one who really has kind of come out of nowhere. The next one we're going to hit with is one that I think we all are a little bit more aware of. Ike Irish was one of the top college bats in the class last year at this time. A lot of questions at this time last year. Is he going to catch? Is he an outfielder? Where is he going to play? The Orioles drafted him and basically said, you're a hitter, right? everything we heard was this was not someone who's like, please, you will rip this catcher's mitt out of my hands, you know, basically with my, you know, my dying breath. No, he was someone who wanted to hit. He's gotten a chance to hit. He's really hitting. He's moved up a little bit in our, you know, again, in our top 100. I would just say, I would just ask kind of Jeff, like, how good could this bat be? Because again, it's going to have to be pretty impactful. His offense, his contribution largely is going to be offensively. But what is the upside? What's the ceiling here, do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, what you're sort of banking on with Irish is a good sort of balance or blend of offensive tools. Defensive upside is not going to be huge. You could probably be a pretty solid first baseman, maybe play a corner outfield spot. But you're looking for a guy here who's going to hit for a high average, walk at a high rate, hit the ball hard at good angles. That was a that last part of that was a little bit of a problem for him at Auburn. He did hit some homers. He did hit for some power. It's a little bit of a flatter swing that didn't generate a ton of loft. The Orioles worked with him on that in the offseason. He is hitting the ball in the air a little bit more. You can even kind of look year over year, though it's small samples from last year, like 20 games and 27 this year. Ground ball rate is down quite a bit in a more acceptable area. I think you still want to see him hit the ball in the air, maybe more like 55 to 60% of the time versus kind of the 50-ish percent line that he's kind of towing right now. But good EVs. A guy who puts together really good plate appearances. He'll chase a little bit, but I think it's reasonable. Plenty of bat speed, does real damage against velocities, has no handedness issues. He hits lefties pretty well in addition to really mashing righties. And I think we'll see some of this stuff tick up throughout the season. But good left-handed power and kind of a good balance of skills and power, which if you're a first baseman, corner outfield guy, you need to bang.
You need to bang. He is doing that. And again, like this is a scenario system that does not have as many hitters banging as they did a few years ago in the minor leagues. So like, I think it kind of adds to Irish's importance. But he is off to a very good start. He is moving up our top 100. Speaking of that, we've got a couple of young guys who we really are excited to talk about, and we'll head to them right after this quick break.
Kratzy, real simple, man. When you're looking for the best seats available, where are you headed, big dog?
SeatGeek, super easy, because they give us everything you need. You can look at all that. You can look at where you're going to be sitting. I got to sit at a certain spot. I want to be able to see the whole field. I don't need to be close to the field. Got to be a little higher, out of the sun. I'm bougie that way.
Of course you are. And guess what? You have a big family and so do I. So you have to decide right away. You got to do something quick. This is real simple. It's affordable and it's fantastic for a big family like yours and mine to get seats available as soon as possible. And oh yeah, you need a code. I got that for you too. You can use code TERRITORY10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% of any tickets with promo code TERRITORY10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. Thank you, SeatGeek.
And we're back. So, Jeff, speaking of guys who you just laid out with Eric Hartman, how we added him, how there's a lot of reporting behind this, how we feel really comfortable about it, and we don't think that we're rushing the gun here. I will tell you right now that I kind of thought when we were first talking about Luis Hernandez with the Giants, I was a little nervous because that was one where there was reporting behind it, but he hadn't played a game, right? Like literally he had not played a pro game when we added him to the top 100. Now we had very strong signs. We had reporting, Ben Badler had done reporting, you know, in the Dominican and in Latin America before he ever signed, you know, Jesus Cano, when he was with us, you know, was, you know, seeing him out there in the complexes, even before spring training, you know, leading up in spring training. We knew that we reported that he was coming to the U.S., skipping over, going to the DSL. We knew all that. But there's still a little worry, like, okay, you put a guy on the 100, even with overwhelming noise about the tools, about the possibilities, the potential, all that, then he starts the complex league and you're like, okay, fingers crossed. I hope we're not stupid on this one. I don't feel too stupid right now. I don't know about you, Jeff, but again, it is very, very short samples. It is 7 games right now, but we will point out in those 7 games, Luis Hernandez already has 3 home runs.
Yeah. And we had some idea of what the backfield work looked like during the spring and some of the games that, you know, Jesus and others that were out in Arizona. The other thing is, you know, he did have sort of an unusual track record because if I'm not mistaken, he actually maybe played some professional baseball games in a league in Venezuela prior to signing. So there were some numbers and video of him against older competition. I can't find those numbers on BREF, but I'm almost positive that he did back when he was in his home country of Venezuela. So a really advanced 17-year-old. I think it's always a great sign when these guys skip complex levels. It's usually very loud kind of signal from the team that this is a dude. The guys that I can remember recently that did it, at least that were, you know, had the hoopla and ballyhoo around him like Hernandez, is Leo DeVries. It's gone pretty good. And another guy by the name of Jackson Churio, which went pretty good. Then Jesus Mate, also gone pretty good, JJ. Might be
in Mate's case, he did play in the DSL.
Okay, but I'm saying, but he skipped the full season complex level. So it's and just like Churio played DSL and then skipped.
I'm saying
anytime guys are skipping complex levels, whether it's both, which is the DeVries Hernandez situation, or even just one. It's usually a pretty loud signal from a team that they really believe in this guy and they feel that he's going to be, you know, comfortable doing so. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes it's DSL, sometimes it's the domestic leagues, depending upon, you know, I'm sure the number of players and, you know, all those rules domestically that you need to sort of follow. But there's a reason Hernandez is here on the backfields. And it wouldn't shock me if this guy, maybe by July, late July, early August, August is probably the latest, but I would predict he's going to see full season ball before the end of the summer.
Well, that's part of when you say, like, when you come to the complex like this, to me, like, there is a separation here. Like, yes, Mate, Churio skipped over the Arizona Complex League in their second year they played full season ball. So that's but if you come now with the timing that it is now for the Florida and Arizona Complex League, when those seasons run, you are essentially, like in Hernandez's case, either he will shut it down as far as he'll be playing in like fake games and, you know, bridge league and all that, or he will move on to full season ball because they've moved the timing of the complex leagues. Otherwise, he'll be done basically right after the draft, right? Because that's when those seasons end. So it really does set him up that you're expecting him now to play full season ball in his age 17 season, which is really loud. And by the way, is the kind of thing that if you, like we see with Leo DeVries, like we saw again, when you say, if you skip the complex, that puts you on that timetable that if everything goes perfect, right? Like you have to do everything still has to go right. But if everything goes perfect, that's where the 19 and 20 year old big leaguers come.
And he's also, I think the other part of it too, that's like DeVries, is he was a little older for the class, where like Mate and Churio a little younger. So, you know, it's kind of all comes out in the wash. Like Mate is only a year and a half older than he is, which is kind of remarkable from the Mate perspective.
It is still pretty remarkable. But yes, I would say he is another one who absolutely has kind of impressed and put himself on the map, even further than he was. He already was on the map, but so far so good. Speaking of that, man, it's a Team Canada, a Team C kind of day here, because last year Nathan Fleueling kind of really did emerge, really kind of showed what he could do in low A. And I would say that Fueling really was, the Rays catcher, was one of the more impressive performers. And partly also, wrote about this in the offseason, young catchers don't catch that many games now. That's kind of the general rule is we don't want to wear them out. You know, it's catching's hard. There's a lot of it that's even like, doesn't count in games, but you have to do as well. But Nathan Fueling last year, primarily at low A, ended up at high at the end of the year. But between those two levels, he caught 78 games last year, which for an 18-year-old is a extremely large number. There are not many catchers in the last 5 years who have caught that many games in pro ball at that age. Ethan Salas, I think, did. It's hard to find a whole lot of others who did. But more than that, like, he's impressive as far as, like, he really does embrace catching. You know, this is a guy who really does seem to really want to catch. But on top of that, and by the way, has, you know, I mean, impresses back there, like, has a good arm, has all the tools to do it. But more than that, and this is where I'm going to serve it over to you. I know you and I've talked about him for a while now, that this is a guy whose bat could be really special, especially when you consider that he's a catcher.
Yeah, and he was a guy where, you know, the underlying numbers were excellent last year, but the slash line was like kind of underwhelming. I think if you look at like a WRC plus, it puts Carolina numbers in perspective, especially when you're comparing those against a more neutral Florida State League, I'll say, depending upon the park, that can play in the opposite factor. But overall, Florida State League is a little bit more of an offensive league than Carolina League. And then, of course, you got the Cal League, which is a very offensive league. So it kind of skews things when you're comparing people just with public stats and slash line numbers. You get, what, 230, 341, 393. Had a higher walk rate of like 20% and a fairly high K rate. This year, the numbers are starting to sort of match the underlying data. Takes a ton of pitches. He very rarely chases. His contact skills are really good. It's a 19% in zone miss rate with a lower chase rate. So that even mitigates some of the whiff that he does have in zone. And then the power is 70 to 80 grade. It's a 107.7 90th percentile just on EVs. Now, the angles, there's a lot of other stuff here, though he does hit a lot of fly balls.
But to put that in context for people, when you see a 19-year-old with that 90th EV,
yeah, just to put it into perspective, 29-year-old Lucan Baker right now who's a giant human being, right?
Who has 120, 130 plus minor league home runs.
And we would say hitting the ball hard is his primary carrying tool.
Going back to his days at TCU, he has always hit the ball exceedingly hard. And I want to make sure I'm not underselling him. 146 minor league home runs
Arjun Namala. He's also in this area. I misread it. Brooks Brannon, who I saw this week, and I actually saw Arjun Namala in the same series. Brooks Brannon, who made the hot sheet, had a multi-home run game in front of me and had a 4-for-4 game in the following game. Huge power there. Big guy. His carrying tool, once again, is power. 107.6 90th percentile. Fueling is above those guys, and he's got better plate skills than they have. A couple of major leaguers that are in this range, too. Colby Thomas, Noelvi Marte, below him in EVs. Andrew Fisher, a guy who's been known for how hard he hits the ball, he's below him in 90th percentile. And he has one of the among teenagers, I believe he has the highest hard hit rate for anybody in this sample that had 70 or more balls in play. Fueling to me has power with skills, with defensive value. This might even be a guy we kind of look back on and say, maybe we shouldn't even have him higher. Right. And there'll be time for him to push us to do that. But there's a lot of reasons to buy into Fueling. And I'll say right now, this Rays system might be one of the biggest arrow up systems. And it's not from the guys that you necessarily expect, though. A lot of those guys are getting great feedback. It's the Fluellings, it's the Cooper Flemings, it's the Tayton Grays. Those guys have phenomenal data, really good performance on the field, and we're getting great scout feedback. Okay. So when the analysts, the scouts, and the performance, the baseball card numbers all match up, they're pretty good prospects.
Let's put it this way. You and I love to watch a lot of minor league games. Most watchable team for me right now, night in, night out, Charleston.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Charleston. Wilmington right now is loaded too.
Wilmington
team, which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes. That Wilmington team, that's pretty close, JJ. That's a tough one. There's a few out there. That's definitely one that I'm always honing into and kind of putting on because they're such a loaded roster. But I agree.
I will also say, pour one out, because I love that Seth Fernandez got promoted to high A. We'll get to see him against better competition. I'll get to drive and see him, hopefully next Friday, maybe. But at the same time, you and I posted this on social media. Like, having Seth Fernandez at Bradenton with one of the best broadcasts, a broadcast that would be great in AAA being done in the Florida State League, with that angle, with Velo's on the screen, with sharp camera in center field, I will miss that because it was so fun watching Seth Fernandez pitch on that Bradenton camera angle where it was just, you just knew you were going to see everything you wanted to see. Not going to get that as much in Greensboro, I hate to say it, but we'll live with that. But yes, that's our little nerdy MILB TV digression. But we got to take one more quick break, but when we get back, we will cover why you should be paying attention to that Wilmington team. And it's not Ronnie Cruz. We've talked about Ronnie Cruz. There's someone else, a couple other people that you should probably keep an eye on. Be right back after this quick break. So, Jeff, the last one that we're going to talk about today, as far as the guys who really have raised their stock, is one that I think very much fits in your wheelhouse as a guy that you really have been impressed with and really been talking up and doing the reporting on also. But what is it about Devin Fitzgerald, one of the many, and I do mean many, middle infield shortstops, but let's just call him a middle infielder, one of the many middle infielders in the national system. What is it about Devin Fitzgerald
you can put him in the second base, third base category. He may end up at third long term. I've just been really impressed dating back to last year when he was still with the Rangers. And I thought this was a phenomenal target by the Toboni front office. They've done a good job of kind of going after guys that I think check a lot of boxes and are very similar to the type of players that they had success with targeting in Boston or in Pittsburgh with, you know, obviously Justin Horowitz was over there and had some success in terms of his drafts as well. It's a very good scouting group. To me, he really is one of their unique players that blends plus contact, plus approach with above average power and pretty good angles. There's not a lot of guys that kind of check all those boxes. Is he a standout defender? No, but I think he's probably good enough to be kind of a fringy defender at multiple positions. He's not an absolute butcher in the field by any means, just maybe limited a little bit in terms of range and physicality. There's enough arm there. Quick release. His actions and hands are pretty good. He's a coach's kid. His father is the head coach at Marjorie Stoneham Douglas in Parkland, Florida, which obviously has produced many, many big leaguers. Jesus Lizardo, Anthony Rizzo, guy by the name of Roman Anthony, and a couple of others that are in that mix. So he knows what it looks like. He's been around ball his whole life. And I think just when you look at the assignment with the very limited track record that he had at full season levels because he had a shoulder injury last year, the fact that they were comfortable enough to assign him to high A, and he's handled a very difficult place to hit, though it's looked better because of how talented this team is, very difficult place to hit in Wilmington and put up really good numbers. So there's a lot of things to like about Fitzgerald, and he kind of checks my three pillars of the type of hitters I go after when I'm looking at data and kind of match it up with other stuff. But when you make really good contact, you make really good swing decisions, and you hit the ball hard at good angles, more often than not, those guys go pretty good.
And of the four guys we've talked about here, I've kind of been having some fun building up some kind of under the hood data. But he has the best contact rate of the four that we talked about, of the five we talked about. Hernandez, we can't really say it yet. Hernandez has seven games. So let's don't even include him in this discussion. But the data I have has that he has the best contact rate of a group of guys who all are pretty good at this. But in Fitzgerald's case, when you said like he's not a great defender, but the other key part of this though is he's also not a zero as a defender, right? Like, we often get the question, why is so-and-so not higher in the top 100? Why is so-and-so not on the top 100? And I feel like I've kind of given this answer a lot of times, which is, if you're a first baseman, you know, like, we can talk about Fike Irish, but if you're a, the reason we started with, you better be really good offensively. If you're a first base slash corner outfielder who's really a fringy defender in the corner outfield spots, you better really mash, because you don't have a whole lot of chances if you don't. If you can play a plausible second base, third base, if you could play shortstop in an absolute pinch, there are a lot more paths for you to get regular playing time, because there are teams who just don't have productive second baseman, productive third baseman. And especially if you have enough, because the thing that has always been talked about with Devin Fitzgerald, you said, coach's son, when you have savvy, you don't have to have, like, I think we're seeing this with Kevin McGonigal at the big league level. Kevin McGonigal just does all the little things really well. In addition to being a great hitter, I mean, he is still stretched defensively by what they're asking him to do, but he runs the bases really well. He does, like, all these little things. Devin Fitzgerald has, you know, again, I don't want to say he's not Kevin McGonigal. I think you've actually used that though before, though, if you've said, like, you know, he is kind of like, he has some of those traits. No one has them all. Really, we wrote about this in the offseason. No one has all of the hitting traits that Kevin McGonigal does, because Kevin McGonigal really did check off, like, you, there, he was pretty much the only guy I could find over the last 5 years in the minors who it's like, nope, he is great at every one of the key kind of foundational pieces. You talked about it here, where when you combine, like, if you're looking at this analytically, how well does he make swing decisions? Does he understand the strike zone? Okay, that's one. Do you swing at pitches, strikes, and not swing at balls? Okay, when you do, can you make contact, especially can you make contact in the zone at those? Okay, the bat-to-ball skills to really do damage when you do. Do you hit the ball hard when you do? Do you do it at the right angles? Do you know where you're not just hitting a ground ball hard, which, okay, at best is going to be a single unless you're Bobby Witt Jr., you know, and you're hitting it down the line and Kerry Carpenter runs in the wall or whatever, but usually that's a single. Can you hit it in the air and do damage with it? Can you pull it in the air and do damage with it? All these things. Kevin McGonigal did all of those things at an exceptional level. Devin Fitzgerald does a lot of those things at a very good level, does he not?
Yeah, and I think that's why I threw the McGonigal comp on, because there just aren't a lot of guys that do all the things that he does really well and check all the boxes that he checks. And that's sort of why he's in that mix, frankly, and why I use that comp. Now, I don't think it's an 80 hit tool, but you know, if he keeps progressing this way and the power gets a little bit better and the contact continues to tick up and he's taking those kind of at bats, I mean, I think it's a plus hit tool now. Maybe that's a little bit aggressive, but I'm never one to shy away from big takes when the numbers back it and the eye test backs it.
No, it is. And I will say, like, when you said, like, that Wilmington club is an extremely watchable club, and I completely and totally agree with you. Like, and again, we just need to emphasize, in one of the most inhospitable hitting environments that you can possibly be in. Because, I mean, again, like, I think that we're not even mentioning, like, an Ethan Petrie who's there, who's another, I would say, really interesting. But I would say that, again, the two teams, the summary point of this that I'll kick it back to you on is, I do feel like if you said, what are the two organizations that we feel most, kind of like get the most improved award, here we are mid-May 2026, from where we at least perceive them to be coming into the season to now, I would say it's the Rays and the Nats, isn't it?
I think so. When you look at the names that we've talked about, and, you know, some of the other guys that we didn't even dig into, there just seems like there's a lot of green arrow up players in each of those systems. And they're fairly talented systems to begin with. So, you know, that kind of pushes it even further that there's already a lot of talent here, and a lot of the talent they brought in, whether through acquisitions, last year's draft, et cetera, has gotten better.
But well, that is the Baseball America Prospect Podcast for this week. Jeff Ponce and myself, JJ Cooper. We appreciate the download. Please like and subscribe if you're on YouTube, or leave a review if you're on the podcast feed. And as I've seen many of y'all do, because we are responding to a lot of comments now, thank you for the comments. Please keep them coming. That is something where we love. I love reading them, but at the same time, it helps other people because it puts it in their feed too. The algorithm does like to see people talking and communicating. And I love to answer them. So we appreciate you being here today. Check out all the stuff at baseballamerica.com. We have, again, more updates on the top 100 worth checking out. We have prospect coverage every week in addition to everything else that comes on at Baseball America. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.